Hi there, everyone, and welcome to Paizo's Gen Con panel seminars here. We've got, we're going to be talking about Battlecry and a little bit about the Hellfire Crisis. My name is Jason Keeley. I'm Pathfinder Senior Designer, and with me is...
I'm Logan Bonner. I'm the Pathfinder Lead Designer.
All right. I was the lead on the Battlecry book, so I'm here to talk about it to get you all excited about picking it up because it should be available today. If you're at Gen Con, come by the booth and come pick it up. Otherwise, this book is sort of very much the tentpole, the sort of opening salvo, to speak, for a big meta event called the Hellfire Crisis. And this is essentially, to put it in the bluntest possible terms, a war between the fiendish-loving fascists of Cheliax and the freedom-loving Knights of Andoran. They are clashing over a small country that Cheliax has been lording over for decades now, and it just sort of breaks out into an all-out war that is going to change the face of Galarian as we know it, as people, other countries get involved and other things happen, which you'll find out as the meta event continues. We've got this book, we've got some Lost Omens books that'll be coming out for this, and some Adventure Pass that you're all going to love to participate within the Hellfire Crisis. And again, if you're at Gen Con, you can go play the sort of one of the kickoff events for this is the Battle of Hell Knight Hill up in the Sagamore Ballroom. It's a special event. You don't need tickets. Come by, say hi, play for about an hour, check out some of what's the new skirmish encounter stuff, which we'll talk about later, and check out some awesome, cool terrain. Now, that all sort of is going to keep going. We have a website for that, hellfirecrisis.com. Go check that out. There'll be stuff about products. Oh, and then we'll have a novel in it. We'll continue on with the fiction line with that. It's just going to be massive. And I can't really say any more without spoiling it.
Truly, there's a lot coming. And a lot of surprises, and kind of too much stuff for us to even cover in a panel, right, even if we spent the whole time on it.
We'll be having more panels about this as the other events come along, other cons come along. We'll tell you more and more about those new books and what's going on in them. And then when this is all over, I don't think we're necessarily going to have like a debrief kind of panel situation. But you know, we'll come see us on social media and we can talk all about what the heck just happened. But let's talk about Battlecry. This is the sort of big tentpole release here. It is a big old hardcover on the Pathfinder RPG line, and it's just chock full of stuff that is about war and characters that are influenced by war, have backgrounds involved with war, and who fight in war. And we've got some new sort of like a bunch of stuff basically, and we're going to go into that right now, kind of go through the book a little bit and let you know what's coming
down this, the pike. This book works really well with the Hellfire Crisis, but you can also use it for any other big battles or veteran characters or stuff like that for whatever campaign you're running.
Exactly. It'll slot into sort of any campaign, but there's a lot of some advice in here about war campaigns and how the Hellfire Crisis sort of begins as part of our sort of lore part of the book. But mainly here, one of the big things this book introduces is a brand new ancestry to the role-playing game. These are the Jotunborn. If you take a look at the cover, you can see my big, beautiful boy, Grimir, the iconic on the cover there. He is Jotunborn, and it is the sort of newest ancestry that we wanted to bring in to sort of show off like stuff that's going on here. And no better sort of person that you want to have at your side is just someone who's like good 12 feet tall and with rippling muscles and big thick neck. The Jotunborn are a sort of a large ancestry, one of the sort of introduced that sort of mechanic a little bit in Howl of the Wild and sort of continue on with that. But they're humanoid and they are basically sort of like the descendants of these the Titans that were created at the beginning of the universe. They are created by the gods to sort of when the Titans kind of were like rebelling and being a little too rambunctious, they were like, well, let's create an ancestry that's a little more sort of cool and calm and collected that we can sort of control as gods might want to do. They were sort of tasked with stewarding the world, the sort of the universe itself, making sure things go right, things are going along, clean up after any disasters. They're kind of basically like huge planar janitors who come in when the messes get get messed up. But because they generally, they live in a sort of a subplanar realm, which is something new that we're introducing called the Fray. And it kind of sits just kind of under, metaphysically speaking, under the universe. And it is a sort of a place where their nomadic culture goes from here to there. They spend their times, dealing, there's not many natural inhabitants of the Fray, except for them and these sort of beetle-like crustacean-y creatures called Ilvars, Ivlars, I always get that wrong, which they sort of herd and shepherd for their silk, which they use in sort of a culturalistic decorations on their skin. They weave this silk into their skin, and the skin can kind of glow. And the patterns that they weave on their bodies may denote more about like what kind of culture that, you know, what sort of clan or whatever they're from, and what kind of stuff they might be doing. Like a warrior might have more jagged lines, whereas a sage might have more whorls or magic looking symbols on their body. It's pretty cool. Are basically, you know, the big they use their size. All their ancestry abilities are basically using their size and this sort of like planar connections for them to like kind of like hop around and dash around and stuff like that. I think they're neat is all. They have a kind of an interesting story to their history and what they do, and the fact that they, you know, they showed up a little bit after Earthfall, helped clean up the world a little bit, and then hop back into their subplanar realm. But now with the gods' reign and death of Gorm, they've sort of come in again. There's stuff to clean up, but now a lot of them can't go back. Because of some disconnect with their planar realm. And so we're going to see more of them as adventurers roaming the lands, as you make your own sort of big, beefy fella or lady.
They've been cleaning up the plains. Now they can clean up the battlefield.
Yeah.
Pathfinder Battlecry.
Thank you, Logan. The other big, huge thing with Battlecry are two brand new classes. If you've been following along, we play tested these a while back, and now they're here and they're ready to go, and we're happy to present them. So, Logan, why don't you talk a little bit about the first class, the Commander?
Yeah, the Commander is something people have been clamoring for a long time, which is kind of a tactician who can buff their allies and do special tactics on the battlefield. They're kind of cool because a little bit like some spellcasters, they get to prepare what tactics they think are going to be best for the day. So they kind of have a selection they can draw from, and then they can kind of command everybody to do cool moves. And they're all kind of in different categories. So you have like mobility tactics and you have offensive tactics. So you can kind of sculpt different scenarios and kind of like play out how the day, how your day's adventuring might go, and then prepare for that and execute those plans. They all carry a cool banner that's kind of the center, you know, that's what everybody can see and follow, so they can kind of give their commands. They can, you know, kind of flag core, help their allies understand the signals, and run them all over the battlefield.
Yeah, it's basically these tactics can get kind of like bonkers at higher levels. There's like things that, you know, eventually you get sort of again with the like Logan mentioned, offensive and mobility, but then you get like expert and master, and then eventually these legendary tactics, which are basically like, oh my god, all you people who are I think it is one that's basically like everyone who's diet or dying, stand up and go and like, you know, and attack. And it's like, oh, the Valkyrie's charge brings some, you know, give some healing and lets people move stuff. Now, what's kind of cool, one of the things we had to deal with this is like with the sort of action economy of the game, knowing that like I'm a commander, I'm going to take my action or actions to sort of command a bunch of people on the battlefield, maybe one, maybe two or three, anyone can hear me depending on the tactic. What does that mean for them? Are they using their reaction for that? That's going to be really kind of not so great for your fighter who's not going to get the reactive strike then if they have to use their reaction for that. Well, the commander has right off the bat basically says, okay, that's great. If you've drilled with me, you get it basically like I get to give out one free reaction per tactic that I do per round. So it's like, okay, you don't have to use your reaction. You can, here's a reaction that I give you to use, but only to do this thing that I'm telling you to do. So listen to me and you'll be able to do it. And that's pretty fun. That sort of helps with the ideas of it's an interesting, both of these classes we'll get to it, kind of are play a little bit with the action economy here and there, which is sort of some fun things to do, especially when tactics are all important on that battlefield.
Yeah, they're both kind of, you know, stretching some of the limits, which is one of the things that some of the best classes do, is kind of like, okay, yeah, how many things can we do on my turn when I'm commanding a bunch of people? And then our second class is kind of stretching the a different side of play.
Yeah, indeed. That is, of course, the Guardian. Both of these classes are pretty martial focused. You know, they're trained in weapons, they're trained in armor and that kind of stuff. But the Guardian is more, well, the commander's a little more sort of like, often offensive, get out there and punch him, or get back over here and protect me. The Guardian is more just sort of being the one who takes those hits for their allies, gets in the way of that kind of stuff, and is the best at sort of getting the most juice out of their armor. You know, we've got the Champion, which is of course very heavily armored class, gets a lot out of like reacting to people hitting their friends and you know, within a certain range, protecting them with shields and whatnot. The Guardian does this in a less sort of divine magical way. It's just fully martial. It's fully on, you know, physical of what they do. They fully, you know, they basically sort of can use their reaction to get in the way of an attack and just soak it. So you take the damage instead of mitigating some of it for your friend, you just take the whole pile of it. But of course, that sort of questions a little bit about how well they would survive that kind of thing. So they do get a little, we've sort of played with this, how good can they be with armor at this level? They try to be pretty good at it pretty early on, and it gets better faster than a lot of the other classes, so they get that protection. But the intercepting the attack just sort of doesn't matter what their armor class is. They're just taking that attack. So we gave them a little bit of sort of natural, we played a little bit with like armor specialization, because usually gives you some resistance generally that happens at higher levels. But with the Guardian, you get some resistances to physical damage right off the bat. It's basically like one at first level if you're wearing heavy or medium armor, but it ramps up with your, you know, as you move up, and you can just kind of like every little hit gets digged down just that little bit, so you can stay up on the field and keep protecting everybody. The other way it focuses the enemy's ire is, of course, with a taunt mechanic, right? We love those in a lot of our video games, so we try to put that kind of thing here in the Guardian. And it's just basically, hey, you fight me, because I've got the biggest, best armor class, so the chances are you're not going to be able to hit me so well, but you come fight me. If you don't fight me, you're gonna be punished. And there's ways that the Guardian can kind of punish the foes if they don't come attack them, or include them in some sort of like explosion. And a lot of that is just sort of like penalties to attacks for the bad guy, but then there's also some other feats and stuff you can get later on. This, oh, you didn't attack me this round. Well, I'm going to hit you even harder this round, and maybe you will pay attention to me now. Again, you know, both the commander and the Guardian also are getting shield blocks from first level, all that stuff, like just to keep them. You know, they get this sort of protection. You know, very very martial, very fun. I hope people like that one, because I had a lot to do with the Guardian class, and it's not my first class for Paizo, but definitely my first class for Pathfinder Second Edition. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've got some really great defenses and those great abilities to kind of draw their enemies in. But it's kind of like any class where it's like, yeah, you can't do this forever. And sometimes you are going to have to, you know, be a little cautious. So they're going to have some really fun play where they're like, yeah, this is the point where you can't really rely on me anymore. So what are we going to do?
That, yeah, we'll see those. It's like, you know, when your barbarian goes down, they don't have that big damage anymore. Like, what do you got to figure out what to do? But you know, the Guardian being defensive, it also has some fun offensive feats that I can take. One of my favorites is the shield wallop one, where you just kind of bang someone over the head of the shield, like not necessarily bang them in like a nail, but it's a pretty good sort of like thing. And the bigger your shield is, the more you can do. Goodness me. Logan, those are the big three things, but there's one more giant thing that we can talk about. Should we talk about it now, or do you want to leave it?
Four things. Oh,
yeah, four things,
Jason.
In one book in this
economy.
Let's
do it.
All right, let's talk about that, and then we'll talk about all the other sort of little things that sort of appear in the book as well that flesh it all out. So go ahead, tell us about a little bit about the new sort of subsystem.
So I'm going to tell you something about skirmish warfare. So
Yeah.
this is something that the commander especially is going to be very excited about. This lets you command a troop on the battlefield, and it's built for special encounters where you're having two squads face off. So this is really good for like skirmishes within a war or the occasional fight where, you know, you're leading this group of elves who are going to invade this you know, stockade, and you want to, you know, play that out without having the GM run, you know, 20 little elf stat blocks. So you attach a troop to one of the PCs, and the PCs can all command a troop in a fight. And we want it to be really kind of free flowing and you know, exciting and dynamic. So you kind of move the troop with you, and you get to command it and say what it does and kind of work together with it. So the main thing we wanted to achieve here was that you're still using all the stuff that you built for your Pathfinder character when you're in this skirmish. So it doesn't just kind of feel like, oh, we stopped playing Pathfinder, we started playing a war game. Your feats are still there, your spells are still there, and you have this troop alongside you, you know, backing you up, and you can, you know, train with your troop to get special tactics that you can, you know, special advantages that are going to apply to your troop, like, oh, I'm the ranger and or the rogue, and I want to have the troop use my stealth so we can sneak up on somebody, even if that's not what they're best at. You have those types of abilities that you can kind of customize your troops so you set up the encounters to your best advantage.
Yeah, the way they sort of meld in the skirmish bonds is what they're called, to kind of meld in what the class, what your character can do, sort of like help you be more your character while also leading a troop, right? You can like, oh, I'm a barbarian, I'm gonna rage. Of course. Well, maybe you can get this one skirmish bond that says when you rage, all of your the troop that you're commanding gets a little extra, you know, temporary hit points as well. Like, oh, they get empowered by your ferocity, right? It's great. Super intuitive to use. If you know how to play Pathfinder, you'll know how to do this, obviously, right? It's the same game as it should be. And it leads to
And
some
it's also
exciting.
pretty flexible too. Like if you want to, if the GM wants to set up a fight where you're going up against a troop that has a commander and another troop that doesn't have a commander, and then, you know, just another monster in there, that still all works just fine. You can really mix and match and just kind of like build an extra big, extra fun encounter.
And they get pretty darn big. So you're gonna need your biggest battle maps for these kinds of things when you have 4 to 7 troop units on the field, right? Clashing up
And
against one another.
if you don't have your biggest battle mat, we also have some variant rules where you can kind of scale everything down by half, basically, and you know, make your troops much smaller so you can, you know, use the smaller table that you're playing on, you know.
Right, exactly. But with that, you know, obviously you're gonna need troops for leading and for fighting against. We had some new troops and some remastered troops in NPC Core. We're gonna see some more. Maybe we've seen some in some previous books, but Battlecry is gonna be your first stop shop. Is that a thing? Not your one stop shop, because we got all the places. But this is gonna be the first place you want to go to get some to look at some troops and what you can do. So we have a whole instead of a bestiary, I called it a garrison full of just troop stat blocks, and these range in level from like 4 to about 20-ish, I think. And they go all over the place, right? You've got your sort of general, like, oh, here's a mob of skeletons that you just for fighting a little bit of undead, or here's an archer regiment for when you want to just command some archers. But then they go from like, oh, here's a bunch of devils, here's a bunch of angels, here's a group of elemental things, here's a I think I've
I
put
like
in an
the
Ulfalth
liches,
in there.
the troop of
The Lich
liches is
Legion,
fun,
yeah, the Lich Legion is pretty good. That's one of our higher level ones, of course, right? Because you get people are like, would like 8, 16 liches like cooperate with one another? I'm like, sure, why not? Why wouldn't they? I mean, when push comes to shove, if Tarbifon's sort of breathing down their neck, breathing in quotes, of course, he's undead.
Lich Unity.
They're gonna go. But we've also, got some fun and weird ones like Mitflitz riding giant ticks, and a good classic Zolgath dinosaur cavalry, right? So, we got a little bit of everything in there, and There's a lot more that you can do with those. You know, obviously use your elite and weak templates to sort of bump them up level as you need them for your encounters. And I'm sure we'll see some more as more books come out and more adventures come out that, you know, might have some of these skirmish encounters in them. Yeah. So that's the sort of like big things in this book. But, you know, it's a Pathfinder RPG book. You're going to find a whole bunch of other stuff in here that you're used to finding. And of course, we got it. We got you covered. We've got backgrounds for if you were involved in a war in the past, or if you're in a war right now, you're just the, you know, you're the message runner between units or whatever, that kind of stuff. We've got all a whole bunch of weird and cool archetypes that are, again, sort of war focused. We've remastered a couple things like the Al-Dori Duelist, brought that in here and give it a couple more extra feats. So now highest levels, you can actually be an Al-Dori Swordlord. Get that level 20 Al-Dori Swordlord feat. But we've got new ones too, such as the Gorilla archetype, which, you know, is pretty self-explanatory. And the Field Propagandist archetype, which is basically you're out there controlling the story of the battle as you go. And you can say, I heard those guys were weak to silver. And then if you, you know, make the check and actually they are. So you can, you know, essentially kind of twist reality just a tiny bit. That's another one of my favorites. I don't remember. There's a bunch more. Some of them are kind of a little bit lore based. Some of them are good and sort of you know, kind of generic, for lack of a better word. You know, classic stuff like that. We've got battle spells in here as well. We've got here are a lot of incarnate spells. Not a lot, but yeah, we've got a fair number of them. You remember those from Secret of Magic? They're basically you summons, but on a huge scale, right? And that nothing better for war than summoning a holy host of Azadas having them attack and then disappear the next round, right? But we've also got other sort of boots on the ground kind of spells, like being able to dig a magic trench or helping your friend reload their weapon magically. And along those lines, we also have siege rituals, which are sort of, you know, more rituals that are focused on siege stuff that might happen to siege, either surviving it or breaking it. Yes, that's the words I want for. So you're on either side of the city wall, you might want to, you know, do a siege. We have a good sort of Macbeth reference in one of the siege rituals, which is the woods of Dunsinane coming. So you can get your woods, do this ritual, get these trees to sort of walk with you and kind of sneak up close to the wall. Like, hey, isn't that forest getting closer? Oh, it doesn't look like it to me. Now you're insane. That kind of stuff. What else we got here? Other sort of smaller character options for some classes that already exist, like the sorcerer, the summoner, the thaumaturge, the cavalier, of course. We've got alongside that a new archetype that is sort of set aside from the other ones because it involves a sort of, this is not a huge temple thing, but it is a new thing also in this book, a way to get followers, or some might call them cohorts. These are NPCs that are you control as your PC that kind of act a little bit like animal companions. They have the same sort of structure, what they do, what you can do with them on a turn, but they're NPCs, they're people, right? And you basically sort of pick a kind of a type, like a sharpshooter or a shield bearer or a medic or something like that, and they get some special advancements as they go along with special powers. To get one of these, you need to take the captain archetype, and then you can kind of, you know, lead up your followers. And we have rules and advice on there, but like, what happens if all my followers keep getting killed? Well, followers are probably not going to follow you much. You might want to train out of that archetype and see, do something else.
See if the
else.
Field propagandist can polish your reputation a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So we got those. Those are pretty cool. They and because even though they are NPCs, you don't have to worry about equipping them, spending your own money to equip them up. They kind of come with their own gear that levels up as they get more powerful, as you take the feats that make them more powerful, that kind of stuff.
I mentioned that the commander has a banner. We have magical banners to kind of help the commander out, so they can have a signature magic item. So those are really fun and can, you know, let you customize yourself a little bit more.
Banners, we got this. It's a kind of a new item type. We got a bunch of those, and there's doing fun things like, you know, waving around and Wait, now I can't actually remember anything that any of them do. In the aura, you get more, a little more like resistance to damage or something like that. Little things like that, right? One of the other things that sort of new kind of item, class of items that we've got here are whetstones, which are things that you basically apply to a weapon before battle, and they give you a bonus that lasts for just about that long. They're pretty sure. Oh my gosh, it's been so long since I've done this book, y'all, that I can't quite remember every little thing about it.
That's the nice part. You get to the point where you can open your book. Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, we right. did that.
I wrote those. Like,
oh my goodness. Let me look them up real quick, what they can do. Yes, they are consumable. I just wanted to make sure I didn't say anything completely wrong. They're basically consumable little, you know, they're just kind of almost a different kind of take on like oils, like what you would apply beforehand and do that. But they're, you know, they come in different shape and sizes. They're not just stones. You get one that kind of looks like a little gargoyle head to sharpen it and give your weapons some bleed damage and that kind of stuff. And they need to be applied to certain types of weapons generally. So that's pretty cool. But those are new types of items. We also have all your good stuff, new magic items, new magic armor, new magic shields, new magic weapons, magic held items, magic worn items, the whole gamut of magic stuff.
And for when you're doing kind of those big scale combats, we've also got siege weapons and mm-hmm. battle vehicles to ride to war on.
One of the fun ones is the Steam Turtle, which is a cool steam-powered boat that basically is great for landing, you know, on the beach and just discharging all of your troops everywhere. I'm excited that a lot of our sort of held magic items are musical instruments. Because, you know, you got to have the war bagpipes and the war drum and all that kind of fun stuff. But we also have a couple new, some remastered sort of standard weapons in here. Of course, it's a book about fighting, so we got to throw a couple weapons. You know, we throw in the battle loot. Speaking of weapons, you know, the war lance and the lion scythe and that kind of fun stuff. But there's a couple extra new weapons in here that I'm very excited about. They're from the Jotunborn ancestry. It's kind of big, weird weapons that are kind of also tools in a lot of ways. One of them being the Blade Sweeper, which is kind of like three swords tied to one hilt that kind of looks like a big, scary rake. And the Maul Spade, which has only just a tiny bit of influence from Star Trek and has a battle shovel. Again, big two-handed weapons for our big two our big Jotunborn fellas. Gosh, have I talked just about everything and that's in this here book?
Oh my. I don't think what you have, Jason, because there's a whole story going through this book.
Oh my gosh, of course.
That really ties into the Hellfire Crisis that I think you touched on just very briefly, but you've got a lot more info on that.
I know. There's we have our iconic Grimir Guardian and our iconic commander Ulka Oathshriek. Go on to the Paizo blog. You can see their stories and some of their encounters already there. But this is all sort of this is the story of how they meet up and are initially sort of maybe a little hesitant to trust one another. But then they realize they're being played by a third party, and then they go and get revenge. And in the process, they kind of create their own mercenary group around them, and are going to like go out there. And what happens is they get back up to the area of Chelyax just as the war is kicking off, and they're like, "Oh, well, none of us really like Chelyax, so we're gonna, you know, see if Andoran wants our help." That's going to be their continuing story if their story does continue. But this is all just sort of prelude to all of that. All of that is sort of hopefully fun to read, told in the form of newspaper reports from the field. And it starts off with this field reporter from Absalom who goes down to the Shackles and Vidrian to talk about the Corsair Wars, the Third Corsair War, which has been going on for a while now. And she's like, "Why is this happening so long? The hurricane, you know, her queen is new. Maybe she would have stopped it, but there's reasons for why that's all going on." So she uncovers that. She does some investigative journalism. And in the process, she meets Ulka and Grimir and goes along with them. So it's pretty much this embedded reporter feel that I hope comes out, and I'm pretty excited for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Including that, like I mentioned, GM advice on doing more campaigns, which is all great, and a little bit of like what's the state of the world currently after the God's reign has kind of happened, and what kind of possible potential conflicts are bubbling just there underneath the surface. And with all that, my goodness, it's a chock full book, and it's gonna have something I hope for everyone who wants to play any kind of Pathfinder character and any kind of Pathfinder campaign. So I urge you, I beg you even to go, and I'll do it. I'll beg. I got no pride here. To go check out Battlecry, wherever you get your books, our books from, no matter whether it's from us or from your friendly local game store, go check it out. We're going to have this, you know, we've got the usual stuff where it's got a beautiful sort of special cover that's all, you know, silhouette-y and whatnot, that'll be just the starting opening fire salvo of Hellfire Crisis, and I hope that we all get to the end of it together stronger and ready to put Chelyax back in their place, right, Logan?
Yes, that's right. Definitely don't sign a cool contract and join Chelyax.
Something when you say the way you say that makes me think you already did. Anyway, there he goes. Thank you, Logan, for
I'm back. It's definitely still me.
Okay, whew. I was worried. Thanks for chatting with me about this, Logan, and thanks for listening, everybody else. We'll maybe see you at Gen Con if you're already here, and we'll be here.
Yeah, if you're at Gen Con, come say hi to us. Have Jason sign your books, and put them right into your hands to pick them up at the Paizo booth.
Don't tempt me. I'll be there. Otherwise, you know, we'll see you around the universe.